No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will try to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So call in and join in the conversation by calling in at 888-607-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. Tonight we're going to talk about this week-long ordeal that we've been going through here in Washington for the nomination, confirmation, and nomination of the new Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. But first of all, we have to talk about some things that are going on with statehood. It's been a big week. Unfortunately, Maria is not with us tonight because she's traveling, but I hope that if you're out there listening and you have an opinion on this subject, you'll call in and talk to us because we really want to start a dialogue on this. This has been a really, really big issue. I can't remember a week in Washington that was exactly like this. But first things first. Let's talk about what's gone on in statehood for the District of Columbia. We have five new co-sponsors this week, five new co-sponsors of our bill that's on Capitol Hill to make the District of Columbia a state. This brings a record number of co-sponsors, 203 co-sponsors between the House and the Senate. We've never had anything like this before, so let's give a shout-out to these five wonderful members who have all signed on to our bill. Albie Osiris, New Jersey's 8th District, Kathy Castro, Florida's 14th, Rajai Krishnamoori, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Illinois's 8th, Danny Heck, Washington's 10th, and Eric Swalwell, California 15th. California's still leading the pack with the most co-sponsors, so come on, states. Let's catch up there. I mean, this is just amazing to have this many co-sponsors on this bill. We're just so happy that this is happening. But I must tell you that every one of the co-sponsors is a Democrat. We have 203 Democrats on the bill. We don't have any Republicans at this point. We really need to get a Republican co-sponsor because this is what these are the principles that America was founded on, that everybody should have a voice. There should be one man, one vote. There should be no taxation without representation. And the way to end this in Washington, D.C. is to make the district the 51st state. So come on, Republicans, catch up. Before we get on to the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, let me also say that we're having an event in Washington. If you're a Washingtonian listening in, we're having an event on October 12th at Arena Stage for the benefit of the Statehood No Other Way Foundation. You can go online to statehoodnow.org and buy tickets to this event. It's going to be a great event. We're throwing a birthday party for Dick Gregory, who was a social activist, as many of you know, and was very much a supporter of D.C. statehood. The 12th of October would have been his 86th birthday. He unfortunately passed away last year. And we didn't get to celebrate his birthday because it was just before he passed away. So this year they're doing a play that's getting rave reviews. And I can't tell you what a bargain this is. You can buy a ticket to the play in our reception for $100, and tickets alone for the play are going for $122. Now, for $22 less, you not only get to play and an orchestra seat, we've got the best seats in the house, you get to come to a great reception afterwards where there will be many luminaries, including many friends and family of Dick Gregory's, and we're going to celebrate, and I hope if you're in the area, you'll get a ticket and you'll come and join us. We'd love to see you. Now, on to the events of the week. As you probably all know, Brett Kavanaugh came before a Senate committee today, this week, a Senate committee, the Judiciary Committee, for a recommendation to have his nomination sent to the Senate for a full vote. But they didn't recommend that that happen. They recommended that the FBI do a week-long investigation into allegations that have been brought against Kavanaugh by Dr. Christine Blasey Cook, who said that Kavanaugh attempted to molest her and held her down and sexually assaulted her 34 years ago when they were in high school. So this has been a week-long drama that's gone on, and I want to talk about it. If there's people out there that have some opinion on this, can you call in? And Doug, you need to let me know, because as you know, I was having computer problems and I'm on my phone tonight. So let me know if people are calling in, because we really want to talk about this. Can you put her on? Hello?
Hi, Senator Brown.
Hey, Deborah, how are you? So let me ask you, Deborah, let me tell you that I've talked to several women about what's gone on this week, and I've just been absolutely amazed at the visceral reaction that women are having to this. That, you know, this seems to touch women so deeply, and it doesn't really seem to matter who they are. I mean, young women, my daughters, older women, my wife, my friends, my colleagues, women are just so upset about this. So your reaction, I know you watched some of the hearings this week. What did you think?
Well, I was glued to my TV all day Thursday from 7 a.m. Yeah. till the end. And I was riveted, and it was emotionally hard for me to watch, too. I saw two people with different opposing views, with a lot of pain. There was a lot of pain in both of them for
yes.
different reasons. But it woke up pain in myself, and I think a lot of women across America
yes.
are responding to that, reliving things, maybe remembering things, whatever. It was very hard this week.
Yes, I know that's true, and I've certainly sensed it in people that I've talked to, and you know, I will tell you, the thing that I felt on a personal level is that I have to be very, very careful about talking about this, because it's such a sensitive issue for women, and they've taken so much offense at times if you're not very, very sensitive to the way they feel about it. And what that says to me is that every woman in America is relating to this. I mean, I think there are a lot of women out there that have similar experiences that relate to it, but it seems to me that just about every woman I talk to feels this woman's pain, Christine's pain. They really feel
yes.
it.
Yes, but I also want to say, you know, I felt Judge Kavanaugh's pain, too, just for different reasons. But he looked like he was backed in a corner. He was a little bit more belligerent and sophomoric, and she was more, you know, thoughtful and poised. But there was pain in both parties and in both families.
Yeah.
There was so much pain this week.
I think you're right, and I think that you know, Judge Kavanaugh has done himself a real disservice by coming out originally and saying that none of this was true, it was crazy, you know, he's perfect, he's never drank to excess, he's never, you know, done anything inappropriate with women, and you know, he kind of backed himself into a corner, I think, in doing that. You know, the one comment that both my wife and other women have made to me is, why didn't he just, you know, say something more like, if I've ever done anything appropriate as a teenager, I apologize for it. It was never my intention. You know, something like, look, I was young and I'm a different person now than I was then, but I acknowledge that maybe I did something offensive to this woman, and I want to apologize for it and try to make amends if I can. You know, rather than saying, no, it never happened, I don't know what, she's crazy. And you know, I've got to tell you, I've got to be honest here, full disclosure. First of all, I don't like Judge Kavanaugh. I hope he doesn't get nominated. But that has really nothing to do with this. Yes, I think that he's way too conservative, and I think that he'll be on the court until my grandchildren are old. I mean, he's a young guy.
But
these guys stay around until 90. Huh? I'm sorry?
Why is the White House pushing this through so quickly? Why do they...
Because they want him. They want him. He's a conservative judge. He believes in, you know, the executive power of the president. You know, I think the president sees him as a real ally, and that's why they want him. And it's one of the reasons Democrats don't want him, because they fear that. And I get that. And politics is not a nice business. Let me tell you, it's never been a nice business. People talk about how dirty politics is today, but the truth of the matter is that Andrew Jackson's wife was bullied so much by the press that as soon as he was sworn into the White House, she had a heart attack and died. And he always blamed the dirty press. And you know what they bullied her about? They bullied her because she was betrothed to her cousin, who she married, but was only married to him for a day. They never slept together. They never consummated the marriage. Then it was annulled, and they referred to her as an adulteress when she married Jack.
So she was viciously condemned, is what you're saying.
Viciously condemned, yes. And he was so, in fact, this is I don't want to digress here, but this is an interesting little fact. He had that was almost the Victorian age when he was brought into the presidency, and Dolly Madison and a lot of the other socialites in Washington were always offended because he had a niece who was kind of a bawdy barmaid in the district, and he took her to all the official functions just to annoy the proper ladies of the District of Columbia. And, you know, and because he was so upset about what had happened to his wife. So it's always been, they said terrible things about George Washington and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, you know. I mean, it's always been a harsh, harsh business. And, you know, I can empathize a little bit, I guess, since I've had terrible things said about me, that the situation that Kavanaugh was in, but I think he acted really inappropriately. How do you feel about that? That he questioned the senators and said things like, you know, I like beer. Do you like beer, Senator? You know, have you ever been drunk, Senator? You know, that he kind of lashed out. Do you think? I've heard many people say that that's a reflection of his temperament, and that really should impact the decision on whether to approve him or not, because judicial temperament is so important on the Supreme Court. What do you think about that?
Yes. I feel there's a question of temperament here. I personally was shocked by his display, and I call it the theater of government, that I witnessed on Thursday. I thought a man who wants the job to be on a judge anywhere would have just more forethought and being more poised. And I was shocked by his coming out with two fists barred and his angry face and the tears and his little calendar. He looked like a little boy having a tantrum that was pushing the corner, knowing he did something wrong maybe and trying to be defensive about it.
Yeah. And you know what? That's, I had breakfast this morning with a lawyer who said, you know what, when perception is such an important thing. He said, you know, when you when you defend somebody in court, you know, and let's say you have somebody that's a young person that's committed a crime, you don't let them come into the court with a T-shirt and baggy pants on and tennis shoes. And you know what I mean? You put them in a suit and tie because perception is so important. And that's, and it's funny because that's what the lawyer said to me. Where was Kavanaugh's suit and tie? You know, he came in like the petulant, angry kind
young
of
boy,
you know, somebody that felt that they were entitled. You know, he fit everything they were saying about him. That was his demeanor. And I think that's true.
He should have come out with a beer. We talked about beer so much. I mean, I thought that was insulting that he would talk about beer, waste our time.
Yes.
Not answer questions.
Yes. And you know, I think if there's Republicans out there listening, I think they need to handle this much more carefully than they have, because this is going to hurt them in November. Women are upset about this. And if they push this guy down their throats, women are going to come out and vote. And they're not going to vote Republican. And I think that the Republicans really ought to be careful. I think they've realized a little bit of that, and that's why they've asked for this week-long investigation by the FBI. But you know,
I was happy about the turnaround.
Me too. And I think it was a bit of a compromise. But on the other hand, what's the FBI going to find out in a week about a crime that took place, you know, 34, 36 years ago?
Right. Hey, can I? You gave out the call-in number, and I hope you get some more call-in numbers. But I think you gave a number wrong. Can I just
give it
out for you?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so the toll-free call-in number for Shadow Politics is 888-627-6008, or you can call direct at 323-744-4831.
Thank you so much, Deborah. My computer blew up. I ran upstairs, and I'm on my phone, so I didn't have my script in front of me. And you think the fact that I've said this number 17,000 times that I would remember it, but evidently I blew it at the beginning. So thanks for straightening people out on that. And please call in 1-888-627-6008. I think I said 607. I don't know what I was thinking of, but it's 627. So, please call in, because we'd love to hear what you have to say on this issue. I think it's so important. And, you know, I think, and I'd love to hear from men as well as women on this.
I don't know
how men feel about it. You know, I think that, you know, this is something that we've just swept under the rug for so long. And now that it's coming out, it seems to just be, you know, like a dam has broken. And we have women coming out all over the place talking about these issues. And, you know, as far as I see it, in the long run, this is a good thing. It's a good thing that we do. We have another caller. Let's let them on. Deborah, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Who's this?
This is Dr. Miller from the War Report.
Hey, Dr. Miller,
education.
How are you? Yeah.
I'm okay.
Good. So
and
what do you think
Deborah
about
still
all this?
There?
I don't know.
Deborah.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. I've been listening
Thank
to you guys.
How are you?
I'm okay, and how are you?
I'm good.
Deborah, you raised a question about 10 minutes ago about why the potential Supreme Court justice or nominee at this point wouldn't come out and say, oh, you know, as a teenager, I did do drinking and I did do this, that, and the other. And why wouldn't you just come out and say that? My guess, I'm going to try and give an answer, and I'll phrase it as my guess would be that when you are appointed as a federal judge or any high office in government, quote, they do the background check, but they also do this extensive interviewing of you, and they asked you these moral questions and legal questions and et cetera. My guess would be that when he was going through the process of becoming a judge, that he did not disclose a lot of things that he had knowledge of about himself and didn't want it on the record. Now, if I'm anywhere close to being correct, it would be disastrous for him to say now, oh, well, I did do this, I did do that, I did the other. That would be perjury, because he did not, in answering questions whenever he was going through the process to become a federal judge, truthfully.
Yeah, but doctor, if that's true, Dr. Miller, why would he sit in front of the Senate and admit to it? He said it in front of the Senate, though. He didn't say it originally. When he was on the Fox News interview, he said, no, 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 I was pure as the driven snow. But then he sat before the Senate and said, yeah, I drank beer. Didn't you drink beer? Yeah, I've been drunk. Weren't you drunk? So why would he say it in front of the Senate and not say it when he was in an interview? I have a different take, and I think the reason he didn't say it is,
well, let me make sure I establish my speculation.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
My speculation goes back to when he was being considered for a bench appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how many years ago that was. My speculation says that when he was interviewed, he did not fully disclose to the person or group who was interviewing him on certain questions. That failure to not disclose, if you call it an omission, is perjury.
Well, that may, so, you may be right about this. I mean, you know,
how many years later you going to then disclose today what you did not disclose 5 years ago, whatever the length of time was? That would be perjury. Now, that's
but
a speculation.
Do they go back?
I
heard that they didn't go back that far.
Yeah, they go back. It's, let me tell you, in politics,
they go
back
to 12 years old.
They go back to, you know, you were
the
sent
womb.
To detention in
the womb,
third
Jeffrey.
Grade. You know,
oh,
they
okay,
go back,
okay.
Believe me. But, you know, again, I'm just telling you from my perspective as a politician that if some woman accused me of inappropriate behavior in high school, that, you know, I might say, hey, look, I went to a party and maybe I did drink too much and maybe I did something that was inappropriate. I mean, that certainly was not my intention. You know, I don't know why you wouldn't say something like that, except that you were brought up under the you know, in the sense that you just deny. And maybe maybe you're right. Maybe he started out by denying, and felt that he had to follow through, that he couldn't perjure himself by saying, no, I never did it. You know, I never disclosed any of this behavior. But, you know,
there's another factor here, too.
Yeah.
Consider this. Again, part of my scenario. This happened back, how many years ago? Was it 34 years ago, whatever it
was?
Yeah,
like 34 years ago. Yeah. They were in high school, 1980s.
Yeah. All right, now. She And far as we know, at least far as what I know in terms of what the media is giving us, she's never come forward, nor has anyone else. So if I didn't disclose when they were sending me through the process to make sure that I was a good standing as a potential judge, she hadn't come clean. I won't say come clean. I don't mean that. If she hasn't filed a complaint up until that point, I think, again, I'm going from a behavioral psychologist, sociologist, social psychologist perspective. If it hadn't been disclosed over the years, I would not, according to the person who is being subjected to this process, disclose it. Because it hasn't been disclosed in 30-some-odd years, so I could assume to some extent that it's not going to come up now.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I think that, you know, and I wouldn't expect him to disclose it, but in his defense.
But he was asked, I'm sure he was asked moral questions.
Probably was, yeah.
When they were going, not probably, absolutely say that he was asked questions that deals with morality.
I'm sure he was, yes.
Okay.
I'm sure he was.
And if full disclosure has not been made yet,
yeah.
The questions were, and he did not honestly answer the questions.
Well,
I'm not a part of it. I'm saying this to your audience, is that I'm giving my speculation based upon umpteen years of studying human behavior, following the Supreme Court from early 60s on. I follow the judges, I follow their opinions, and when they offer opinions on laws and et cetera, I've studied it for a long, long time, and I'm speculating based upon what I've learned over the years, that there is a process, and that during this process, I will guarantee the public that moral questions, moral interpretude was asked, and it would appear that he did not provide full disclosure during the current process of being screened for the Supreme Court justice position.
Well,
that
and what
being
about
the case that me would explain why he did not answer the way you and Deborah asked earlier in this conversation between the two of you? That would explain why, in my view, he felt very confident, he did have to, that she hadn't come forward, and all this time, good possibility she wasn't going to come forward or any other person was going to come forward.
Well, I think that's true.
Take.
I think he wasn't, you know, and as a politician, when we train people to run for public office, it's one of the first things we say to them. We say, look, if you have a traffic ticket, you need to come out and you need to disclose it. You need to disclose because there, with the internet today, there are people out there doing opposition research, and they'll find out everything that's gone on in your life. So if there's something that you have to talk about, you need to get out in front of it before it comes back and hits you. But, you know, another thing that may be a real possibility, Doctor, and you would know better about this than I do, but, you know, teenage boys are stupid. You know, I've had one, and I was one. And maybe, you know, this is something, he was drunk. He doesn't remember it that way. He doesn't remember it as, you know, he remembers maybe he remembers it as flirting or something, or you know, just doesn't realize how much he had traumatized this woman. I don't know if that's true or not, but but certainly, you know, I've seen drunken teenage boys do some terrible things. Now, I'm proud to say that on an occasion or two where I've been at a party where I've seen inappropriate action, inappropriate behavior, I've stepped in with other young men and said, look, man, back off, you're drunk, get out of here, leave her alone. You know, I've known incidences where I've done that, but maybe his friends didn't
but
do that. I don't know.
They were secluded upstairs.
Huh? Yeah, right.
They were secluded
They were. And you know, but nonetheless, my next question would be, you know, how does this impact him as a Supreme Court justice? Obviously, as Deborah and I said about his temperament, I think that's something that really should be considered, the way he reacted. But how about the rest of this? I mean, you know, first of all, let me also tell you that the Blassi family are friends of mine. For full disclosure, I was going to say this earlier. I do not know Dr. Blassi Cook because I know the Blassis through my church. They were members of my church. And actually, her brother Tom was a member of my wine club, and he served on the vestry with me. And his wife was my daughter's Sunday school teacher and her preschool teacher. And their kids were in my youth group when I was a youth group minister. But I never knew Christine. But I can tell you, the Blassies that I know are very stand-up, honest, straightforward people. They're of, as my grandmother used to say, they're of the best sort. So that being said, you know, I find her testimony very, very credible, and I know that you know, this offends women so much, and with things like a woman's right to choose being something that's constantly before the Supreme Court, do you think women should be not only outraged about his behavior, but concerned about the mindset that he has about women? What do you think of that, Deborah? You think this guy thinks of women appropriately?
You asked several questions.
Yeah, I did.
Through them. I think women, and I'm not speaking for women, but I would think women are totally outraged, and they should be. This is shades of someone else who's on the Supreme Court who was accused of sexually inappropriate advances. Does the name Clarence Thomas ring a bell?
Yeah, rings a bell.
And he got put on the Supreme Court. Why? Because there was a question that you raised earlier as to why was this guy being pushed to be placed on the court? Well, that's another question, and I'll give you my opinion on that. That's one of the reasons why I call in, was to offer my opinion on a question that you raised, Deborah. But we see a pattern here of put you on the court regardless of what your qualifications are, morally, legally, intellectually, or what have you, because you will serve a purpose, a function. And the function is to give us this 5-4 majority, a dependable fifth vote, and in this particular case, he is totally expected, if he's put on the court, on the bench, he is totally expected to, what, vote against a woman's right to choose, have an abortion as her choice. That is, I believe, why he was selected. Plus, he's a, you know, conservative and he's going to follow the conservative line. But that particular past of his is being a person who has been against a woman's right to choose is why he's there. Deborah, it's part of the question that you raised, my answer to questions that you raised previously. Now, back to the question that you raised, Senator. Women are outraged. Was it just a couple of days ago, or was it just yesterday, there was a tally of the increased number of women who are running for political office, mm-hmm. both like city council, state legislature, now federal position, or Congress, Senate, and how that number has increased over 2016, over the last 2 years. And if you have listened to some of the women, they are referencing, in many instances, their outrage over what other male candidates or males who are in positions in Congress or the Senate or wherever in their state legislature, what have you, people are trying to make a connection between this guy's potential appointment on the bench and the increase in the number of women who are running for public office. Now, that I have followed, because I find that to be very encouraging, and I'm hoping that even more women will pick up the mantle and run for public office. That's my take.
I have to agree with you there. You know, that again, I've trained people to run for public office, and we always say that at the beginning of the beginning of our training, is that if you're not at the table, you don't get served. And, you know, and very often we say, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So, you know, we encourage all types of people to get involved. And of course, we need more women in Congress, and we need them in other positions, because they represent a perspective that, you know, is a different perspective than men have. And it's an important perspective, and it's and they have to be, you know, they have to... there has to be women to represent the interests of women. So I agree with you. I'm encouraged by the fact that more women are running, even though I've got a woman running against me in the general election, and I had one running against me in the primary election, a very smart and capable woman, as a matter of fact. And I don't know the woman that's running against me now, but she may very well be the same. So, but I encourage women to get out there and run, and you know, women vote. They vote more than men, but they run less than men. So, if this encourages more to get more of them to get out there, then maybe that's the final story here. Is that the good of this is that more women get involved, both to run for office and also to come out and vote. And, you know, as I said earlier, I think the Republicans make a big mistake if they gloss over this one-week investigation and push this man through, because I think they'll feel it at the polls in November, because I think women will come out and vote against their candidates and vote for more women candidates who tend to be more Democrats, you know, because of this. And so they, just from a practical standpoint, they better be careful how they handle this. And they should. You know, this is such an important nomination. And this is such an important issue to women. And, you know, women feel it all, you know, they just obviously, from the way they're reacting, so many women feel this so deeply. You know, I've got to tell you that I worked for a women's shelter at one time, and as part of my work for that shelter as a consultant, I read the first report that had ever been done on domestic violence in America. It was done by Ronald Reagan's administration. It was the first, which is amazing in itself that it's that recent, but it was the first nationwide study on domestic violence, and a lot of it had to do with sexual abuse. And as I got into this and I read and I learned more about it, I can't tell you how many women that I'd known my whole life came to me and told me stories about their own experiences. And I was flabbergasted. But, you know, women I had known from when I was in high school, and this is when I was in my 40s, and they'd never said anything to me. And then they would tell me about some experience that they had because they knew that I was looking into this and I was trying to help these women in the shelter. And I was just amazed at how, you know, the report opened my eyes to how widespread it was. But I really never knew how many of my own personal circle of friends had carried these incidences without ever, you know, talking about them. That's how hurtful they were. Yes.
Because I think we're missing the broad. Here's one thing I've noticed, and we might be missing
the caveat.
All right, go ahead, Doug.
We might be missing the broader issue on this.
Which
and what I mean is, what is considered assault? And I often think, since I was a boy, I often thought, you know, wars don't start by somebody hitting somebody else so much. They start with words. And we categorize words not as a physical assault, but we have sound weapons, literally, that can assault you with sound. We do now have weapons in place that hit you with sound, right? They incapacitate you. If you're in a room full of people that are screaming, that sound, that verbal abuse can be just as debilitating, if not worse, mentally to a human psyche. In the case of Dr. Ford, we find that she wasn't actually physically sexually assaulted; she was verbally being assaulted, and afterwards, of course, the laughing. It affected her. So my question is, how do we define assault? Doug. Assault of that nature.
Doug.
Yes?
Yeah. Let me take the first shot, which is she was physically assaulted, Doug. She was held down on a bed. The guy held his hand over her mouth. We're not saying she was walking down the street and some construction worker said, "Hey, honey, don't you look
whistled
fine?"
Whistled
You know, right?
No, I know
her.
She was physically assaulted.
They held her down. She said she was afraid he was going to accidentally kill her. Kill her? Yeah, she was assaulted. If you believe what she says, personally I do, but if you believe what she said, she was physically assaulted. And I think if it was an assault of words, that this would be a whole different. This would be a whole
Should
different
it be?
Issue.
Should it be, or cannot we consider that verbal abuse an assault and distinguish it similarly and even say that it's wrong because in many ways most of the assaults that take place are verbal in nature. It gets to a point, you know, you could say, okay, there's a cutoff point if you physically assault, but I almost think that on some level that the verbal assaults are also just as bad as the physical assaults. And I wonder how you define assault, really.
Well, I think that all depends on who the perpetrator is, too. I think when
Doug, let me come in for a minute.
Yeah, I will, Doctor.
Senator, Doug, can I come in for a minute?
Yeah, please, go ahead, Doctor, go ahead.
Okay. Doug, when in law, assault and battery, that's usually the way we hear it, assault and battery. Assault is verbal attack, not physical, although you could say, you know, verbal could be physical. It is a verbal. The battery is the physical part of that duel, assault and battery. So a person can, you know, yell profanity at you, scream at you, what have you, and that reaches the level in law of an assault. If I understand your question, is almost like one person's assault may not be another person's assault. So how can you define what an assault is? One person may feel like what you just said to me was so inappropriate that it's an assault, whereas another person would say, what he said to me really, it didn't bother me. It is a personal standard to some extent, and especially in this area of the law, back in when, let me see, back in the either late 70s or 80s, when I studied law for a while and I taught a couple of law courses. And I remember saying that a Supreme Court decision, I want to make sure I have this right now. This particular Supreme Court decision changed the playing field from having defined assault as a certain steps, A, B, C, has to take place before it would be reached the level of assault. That is what is called an objective standard. It was changed that I say something to you, in this case a man says something to a woman, and if that woman takes what the man said as an assault, that's an subjective standard. And so hence, it makes it an individual definition. What is one? I hope I'm getting my point over. What I'm trying to say
you
is
are.
The court went from an objective standard to a subjective standard. And I'll give you a current example. The Stand Your Ground law. When Kennedy, Supreme Court Justice Kennedy, authored this particular law, when he said that a police officer, if he feels threatened, if he feels, I'm using he, because most police officers are male, feels threatened, if he feels your behavior is life-threatening, you are justified in shooting said individual. The previous standard was, if the person not only reaches for something in his waistband or his pocket or what have you, you have to see the gun. He has to pull the gun out and almost be pointing at you before you were justified in shooting that person. There was a set of objective steps, measurements, that had to unfold before a police officer could shoot a person and it would be justified. When Kennedy authored the opinion that I'm, as a police officer, tell you to show me your hands, and you don't, I shoot you and kill you. I said, well, I said, show me your hands. He didn't. I felt threatened, and therefore, I felt threatened, and therefore, I fired to protect myself.
Make interesting points.
Doug,
isn't that what Christine, it doesn't this relate back to what Dr. Blasey Cook is saying? She felt threatened. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that she, you know, regardless of the words that were used, and she was physically assaulted, but she certainly felt threatened to the point where she thought that she might lose her life. She stated that, and I believe that, and you know, I think that's something that we really have to consider when we have people sitting up there saying that Kavanaugh's this great guy, and that, you know, I've known his family for years, and I've done this and I've done that with him, and he's a good jurist, and I think we have to take into effect that in this particular instance, he put this woman in a position where she truly felt, you know, using Dr. Miller's scenario, if she was the police officer, that she could have pulled out her gun and fired it.
Well, I have a question. And this is just another question I pose. If we say that there an incident occurred as a teenager, let's say 17 years old, 16 years old, and we do something that's wrong. We maybe make an assault. We're drunk. Something occurs. And that holds us, you know, accountable forever. Then my question is, why wouldn't we, why do we even allow people out of jail? There is no reform per se. I mean, they didn't, you know, if we can hold somebody accountable 30, 35 years later for something they did as a kid. Because I remember when I was in second grade, I even told Deborah this. I remember singing in front of a second grade teacher. She loved us. In matter of fact, she loved my twin brother and I so much that she followed us around for the next 20 years of our lives, you know, wanting to know how we were. But I remember singing, and then at the end of class, when everybody was walking out, even the teacher walked out, this girl, she didn't, you know, she didn't like the way I sang, or she didn't like my voice or something, and she scratched me from my eyes right through my chest all the way almost down to my groin. I remember that. I still to this day remember that. And yet, could I, let's say she was running for Supreme Court or she was running for president, would I stand up and say, look, you know, that situation that occurred when I was in second grade, which I can remember, still feel it to this day, that now she should be held accountable for that. Where do we draw the line? I mean, first graders, what if I have a memory where I'm 6 months old and I can remember my mom screaming and slapping at me? There are some kids that can remember at that age. So what does that mean, really? Where does one draw the line? I don't really know.
Well, it's subjective, obviously. First of all, if a girl scratches you in the second grade, it really means she loves you, Doug, but she doesn't know how to say it.
I was told that later.
That's how they, you know, I have a friend who was beat up every day by the little boy next door, and her mother used to tell her that. She used to say, Huey Greenup was his name, I'll never forget it. Huey really loves you, he just doesn't know how to express it. But you know, what we're doing here, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but this guy isn't applying for a job at McDonald's. He's applying for the highest court in the land, and his temperament should be taken into consideration. And again, I say, I don't know why he didn't say. I mean, if a woman came forth and said that I acted inappropriately at a party when I was a teenager towards her, I think that I could honestly say I may have. I don't remember it, but I may have, and I should apologize for it. And you know what I mean? I don't think there's ever an instance where I did that, but who knows when you're 16, 17, 18 years old and you're at a party and you've had too much to drink, whether you grab somebody inappropriately, say something inappropriate. And that's why I think it would have been better for him to stand up and say, you know, I'm not the
gentleman,
person
I
was.
Gentlemen, can I come
17.
In because this is burning
yeah,
me.
Yeah, and we got to make it quick because we're almost out of time. Go ahead, Dr. Miller.
I know. I have to show. I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Doug, your two questions have basically nothing, in my opinion, to do with what the issues are right here. That's one thing. That's my opinion. You don't like it or dislike it. Two, one, when you commit a criminal act, there's a thing called statute of limitation. Yeah, Murder does not have a statute of limitation. Yeah. Yes. If something happened when this guy was 15, 16, 17, 18, and 10 years go by and there's no complaint filed, then there's a little thing called statute of limitation. You can't bring it to them. This, what's going on in Congress and Washington right now has nothing really to do with criminal behavior that was potentially perpetrated back then. This is a political process, and we're talking incident to try and show character or lack of character, moral perpetuity or lack of, for a political position.
By the way, I agree
by
with
politicians
you.
Who are for and against this. And we happen to be talking about, you guys call him a jerk and what have you. I would call him an asshole that, who, as you said, is going to occupy one of the highest level.
I agree with you both. Just know this.
Well,
I agree
and just so
with
you know,
both.
Just to reinforce what Dr. Miller just said, people have tried to, they've petitioned the Maryland State Police and the Montgomery County Police
to pursue charges against Kavanaugh because of this alleged assault. And in both cases, the police have come back and said exactly what Dr. Miller said. From a criminal standpoint, there's just statute of limitations, and it has expired. So they're not going to investigate it as a criminal criminal complaint. But you're exactly right, Dr. Miller. This is a political process to try to reveal the character and temperament of a man that will sit on the court until my grandchildren probably have children. So that's what's important. And we're out of time now, but thank you, Dr. Miller. Thank you, Deborah, for being on the show. Thank you, Doug. I really appreciate all you guys chiming in. And we'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.